fighting for America.
This is like playing poker with a guy who cheated you twice before. You know who does that? A moron.
Fighting for Idaho.
Well, you ever been to Idaho?
You know, it's funny you say that. Just this last autumn, I was up there on an elk hunting trip.
Did you get anything?
I did. I got the biggest elk I've ever gotten before in my life, and enjoying that on a weekly basis in our freezer.
Fighting for you.
I went and got engaged, so yeah, I kind of got a little bit of a life, but you know, not one that would be enough to ignore the Kevin Miller Show.
Boise's Mr. Right.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning. Joining us now, Senator Dean Cameron. Senator Cameron, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. You've been very busy lately, whether it's the internet, whether it's the budget, whether it's anything else going on with JFAC. We appreciate you joining us here at 580 KIDO. Let's start with always a battle of intrigue, regardless of the political climate, the battle to fund education. We have people that want teachers to make more. We want textbooks in Boise and throughout the state. We also have the internet situation. Where would you like to begin, sir?
Well, let's start with public schools and the funding of public schools. It is a challenge to fit the necessary needs that public schools believe they have into our existing budget. We're working really hard, and in fact, in many areas of the state, public schools are not being able to keep up. They're not being able to attract and retain the best and brightest teachers. Over in the eastern part of the state, Wyoming, for example, is offering $5,000 signing bonuses, and in my area, in fact, I've got teachers positions that are vacant. And so kids are being taught with either substitutes, or they're being taught with kids that are also going to become a teacher. They're going through the alternative route, or they're doing their student teaching, but they're not doing it under a teacher. They're actually there in the classroom. And, of course, we believe kids deserve to be taught by a certified teacher. So we've got some issues to address. The governor has his plan. We're waiting for the Germain committees to see if they pass the legislation necessary to implement the governor's plan, and we'll work it from there.
Senator, would you describe this as a crisis? And I know when dealing with the press, it's hyperbole, this, that, and the other, but you know, whether it's you, Senator Sitaway, and others that have brought up the crisis throughout the state, and you know, here in the Treasure Valley, sometimes we kind of think we're, you know, the state of Ada and Canyon, if you will, but these are real life issues, you know, and in Canyon County, they have the same issue as far as people that aren't certified teaching. Would you right. define that as a crisis, sir?
Crisis may be too strong of a word, but it is certainly problematic. It is certainly a very difficult situation. And every district is a little different because of its size and its makeup. Boise School District has other concerns. But because of their size and their makeup, although they certainly want to pay their teachers more, I don't think they have the same problems in attracting and retaining that you might see in other areas of the state. As you said, they have other issues with textbooks. They have other issues with other items. One of the problems we've got, frankly, is that our number of kids are growing. We're adding over 167 classroom units. And if you think about what a classroom unit is, that's essentially a teacher and 21 to 25 students, depending on the size of the school. And so when you think about that, that's a pretty tremendous hit. So that in of itself is driving the budget in some small capacity. The governor had quite planned on that many in his budget recommendation. He'd only planned on 87, but the numbers are clearly showing a much higher number. In fact, we may be underestimating it at 167.
Well, as we know in business and in other things, if you know, you're getting more people in, they need to be served. We have to get the revenue from somewhere. Any thoughts on that? I know the governor has a proposal. We have other folks have proposals, but If the growth is happening that much, we've got to pay for the additional infrastructure, as we see with all the levies, as you mentioned before, that have been that have sprung up throughout the state for the past 3 or 4 years.
And that has been problematic. The levies certainly are a direct reflection of the fact that the state's revenue has been down, and we had to cut every budget, including public schools, although we protected public schools better than we did anybody else. Public schools initially took about a 7% reduction, while many other agencies were in the 20 to 25%, and some even further than that. Parks and Recreation, for example, was nearly an 80% reduction. Now, where the revenue comes from is the state is growing from a revenue standpoint. We are projected nearly a 5% growth for the remainder of this fiscal year and about a 5% growth for next year. It's a little bit anemic. It's not as strong as we would have liked. Sales tax numbers are still a little bit sluggish. Our corporate income tax numbers are very strong. So we're a little cautious not to overspend, and we should be, frankly. That's appropriate role that we should be anyhow, but we're not over anxious to build budgets up bigger than they can, than they can sustain themselves, because at some point then you have to have pullbacks and reductions. So the governor's budget plan does allow for the 7.4% reduction. Well, of course, with a 5% increase in revenue, you know that that's coming then from someplace else. We are working hard to hit that number. And we believe we can, but it will also mean that other state agencies don't get nearly as much as what the governor had initially projected.
Senator Dean Cameron with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Senator Cameron, is it, you know, I'm a simpleton here. Is it just a question of paying teachers more to keep people here in the state and to actively recruit folks to be certified teachers and to teach, whether it's in Eastern Idaho or North Idaho or here in the Treasure Valley?
No, I don't think it is. I think we believe, everybody believes, that the current K system is broken. Even the teachers believe that. And so there's a plan to restructure how we pay teachers. And then many legislators want additional accountability with that. Well, that, of course, raises some issues and concerns with some teachers. What's that accountability measure going to be? What will it look like? Are you going to be judging me based on the test scores of my students? And that probably in and of itself, by itself, is not a responsible approach. So I think you're seeing the struggle in the legislature is over. How do we do this? They're looking at a 2 or 3 year tiered licensure program where you'd have a beginning teacher license, followed by a professional teacher's license. And then there's some talk about, do you have another step up, a mastery level? And each of those levels would have a significant adjustment in pay. And the governor's plan was to eventually get minimum teacher salary to about $40,000. And currently, the minimum teacher salary is $31,750. That is... supposedly will take place over the next 5 years, but one will see whether we tackle that plan and go that direction, or whether we come up with our own plan altogether. That's really more of a decision of the Germaine committees, and as a budget committee chairman, my job is to certainly have influence, but my job is to wait and see what the result is and then budget accordingly.
Well, you've been very busy. TV interviews, radio interviews, and others concerning the internet, the Idaho Education Network. I know you've been working on that, and you know nobody's happy with the situation. Where are we, and what are your thoughts?
Well, we have been. I've not had a single issue take up more time this year than that. We've been in more meetings than I care to even imagine or even think about. I mean, it's just frustrating, angry a bit. For the most part, we feel comfortable that the direction the committee took last week was the only approach that we could take. As you know, the court ruled that the contracts were void, not voided, not voidable. And I know that may sound semantical, but void means that it was never in existence. We are required to fund based on a valid contract. And in fact, the Attorney General's office very clearly said to us that if we were to fund a contract that was void, it would be considered a misuse of public funds. That's something that I don't want ever to have associated with my name or with my committee. And so our only choice, in spite that there was tremendous pressure put on that we fund the current contract either by an emergency contract or we set aside law or change law so that they could fund the current contracts, we resisted that and said, no, our only choice is to help school districts make sure they can provide internet service so that those kids that are taking IEN or IDLA classes or classes, distance learning classes, can continue to do so so that they're not affected, their graduation isn't affected this year. So that's what we've done so far. Our next step is to look at what we do for the next year. And, of course, the same proponents that wanted us to sign the emergency contract with the same vendors want to be ready and up and ready to go in August with those same vendors. And it's not that we have anything against those vendors. It's the fact that that contract is tainted. It smells like it was done inappropriately. Not that it smells like it. It actually was done inappropriately. The court has ruled such. And so from our perspective, in order to get back to where we can qualify for E-rate funds, those are all our monies that are sent back to the federal government under when we buy cell phones and pay our telephone bills, in order to get back to using those funds to help in this process instead of using state tax dollars, we have to have a clean break. And we feel like that next year you'll see something very similar. And then the following year, you'll see a whole new mechanism. It won't be through the Department of Administration, who frankly is at blame here. And you will see it with better controls, better management from what we had it previously. And we're working on that piece at this point.
Senator Cameron, how confident are you that the internet will stay in the schools through the rest of the year?
I'm very confident. There was lots of rumors, lots of suggestions. Frankly, given by the proponents who were trying to keep the existing contract, that said, you know, the internet was going to shut off Sunday. And of course, as soon as we made the appropriation to schools, our seats weren't even cool yet, and the current vendors were already contacting the school districts, trying to get them to sign a continuance with them. And some will. Frankly, some, that is the best choice. Many others have gone out for bid, are opening the RFPs. I know that in my district, they opened an RFP. They were able to buy the same internet service for about 40% of the cost. We've had some that are actually able to buy better internet service, better bandwidth, for less money. And of course the state keeps telling us, well, that means that there'll be some districts that are going to pay more. Well, the reality is if they're going to pay more, they should sign with the current vendor at the same rate that they're currently paying. And then when it comes to the summer, then they should go out for a strong RFP, and really look carefully at it. So I don't believe that anybody's going to be shut down. If they are, there would have been mistakes made either by another vendor or by the school.
On Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Senator Dean Cameron with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. So we've covered teachers, we've covered the internet. Any word, again, concerning textbooks throughout the state? Again, a big issue.
It is a big issue. Perhaps the larger portion of that, we may fund textbooks as a line item. There is a struggle in the legislature because, as you know, as we set the public schools budget, there are some items that are direct line items, salaries, benefits, not health insurance benefits, but like Social Security and PERSI benefits. And then we go down through professional, technical, technology, early reading initiative, and limited English proficiency, all these line items. Then there's a chunk at the bottom that is given as what we call discretionary or operational. And these are the dollars school districts would use to pay for things like heating and lighting and the health insurance and textbooks, if you will. So there's an argument about, and you may recall that Superintendent Ybarra is arguing for more money in that bottom pot than what the governor recommended. And so there's an argument about how many dollars do we put up above in the line items versus what's in the bottom. Regardless of what we do with textbooks as far as a line item, they can spend some of that discretionary dollars or operational dollars on textbooks. And so we think, and there will be an increased amount of money in that pot, whether it's as big as Superintendent Ybarra wants or not, is a question. So, I do think that one will get addressed. It may not get addressed as directly as some people would like. The problem with line items is you have to spend the money in that line item, and if you don't, then it reverts back to the state. And the benefit of discretionary is recognizing that each district is different. Some people might need textbooks. Somebody else might want to buy iPads or provide some other mechanism to help teach kids.
Senator Dean Cameron with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Anything else you're working on that you'd like to share with us this morning?
Oh, I think that's the biggest issue. Of course, there's tremendous push by some to do different levels of tax increases, tax reduction. Well, I said that wrong. although the tax increase piece comes when people start talking about transportation. And there's a whole discussion about how to address transportation. It's a bigger issue here in the Ada Canyon County area than it is in other areas of the state. Although I will say we all have bridges. We all have bridges that are under disrepair or potentially an issue. And we do have to figure out ways to address that. And frankly, the department has done a good job in realigning itself, cutting employees. We think they need to do a hair more. And I think we're going to have to figure out ways to be creative. There is a debate about whether to use general taxpayer dollars for roads. And most of us believe that would be the wrong direction to go. There are enough strains on the general taxpayer, and rather than we feel the roads ought to be a user pay type approach. Those who utilize the roads the most ought to pay the most. So,
well, that would be a tough sell.
Yeah, it is a difficult, but in a way that's our current system. You have a registration fee and you have a gas tax, and of course the gas tax is completely reflective of the amount of gas you use, and so that sort of signifies your road usage. And of course, the invent of hybrid cars caused some contention and consternation with that, so that's driving that issue a little bit.
Well, Senator, we appreciate it. We wish that was a little lighter load for you, especially with the internet and the teacher situation. But that's what you sign up for, I guess.
That is what we sign up for, and it's weird. I admit it, it's weird, but most of us really enjoy it, and we enjoy that that struggle. And that's what your government should be. It should not be easy. It should be a struggle to make sure that we protect the taxpayer, to make sure that we do the very best, make sure that we're spending those dollars as effectively as possible, and that's our job. And I don't mind that there's disagreements at times between the governor's office and the third floor, the legislative branch. That's appropriate, and it's appropriate to have struggles between the House and the Senate and Republicans and Democrats. That's all very appropriate.
Senator Cameron, we appreciate it. We'd love to have you back, sir.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Thanks for your good work, and And thanks for all you do.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. There you have it. Senator Dean Cameron, you're listening to Kevin Miller.
The Treasure Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller. KIDOAM.com. 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller with you. Coming up, we'll speak with Jeff Manasso of Fox News Radio. I don't know if this happens to you at work, but, you know, you get so distracted with the emails, with the social media, with everything else, and then you find yourself just kind of drifting away. Well, one of the stories that we will be talking about coming up after we speak with Jeff Manasso, we'll have the latest on the sniper trial, the American sniper trial, as they call it, is the situation involving Vito Barbieri, Representative Barbieri. And there have been a lot of people that have been smacking him for his statements yesterday. And we'll get to that. We'll tell you what they are in a minute. But quite frankly, I'm very tired of the double standard when it comes to conservatives who may make a statement that may or may not be controversial. And then we have a vice president who ogles somebody's wife in front of the national press, and they say, oh, that's Joe just being Joe. Now, whether we were born here, whether we moved here, this is the best place to raise a family, best place to be politically active, where one person can make a difference. And it really pains me personally. I get very emotional about this when I sit back and I hear things, you know, people attacking, and look, it's their right. They have opinions. I don't have to agree with it. The comments of Vito Barbieri and saying, oh, what a dope he is and what this and that, and, you know, Twitter and Facebook. We put so much importance on those things. By the way, you can follow me at 580KIDO or at Kevin Miller Show, actually, on Twitter. But just how the stories are worded and everything else. And people make mistakes. Now, Representative Barbieri got on all the shows and said it was a sarcastic comment. The fact that he even has to defend himself is amazing to me. And we'll talk about that coming up. Joining us now, our great friend Jeff Manasso here at 580KIDO. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, Kevin.
Jeff with us from Fox News Radio with the latest on the Chris Kyle murder trial. What's the latest, sir?
Well, the weather is still bad here, and there was a big ice storm that paralyzed North Texas, forcing the Rapid County Courthouse to close yesterday, canceling trial for Eddie Ray Routh, who's accused of gunning down American sniper Chris Kyle and Kyle's friend Chad Littlefield 2 years ago. But we haven't heard anything about delays or cancellations yet, but we do expect the prosecution today to wrap up its rebuttal case, a rebuttal against the notion that Routh suffered from psychosis, paranoia, and schizophrenia. Prosecutors have called Routh very troubled but not insane, and they are seeking life in prison without the possibility of parole.
How has been the composure in the courtroom, Jeff, when we're talking about certainly with the attention of American Sniper, with the veterans community, with Mr. Kyle's widow?
You know, there hasn't been any fireworks here, you know, any outbursts. People have been very quiet. There's a lot of interest here in this town of about 10,000, small town. In the heart of Texas, where you roll in, it takes a two-lane highway to get here. You roll in and you see church signs and business signs that say, God bless the families of Chris Kyle and Chad Littlefield, praying for them. People are interested. People want justice. I think by now everybody has seen the movie. Everybody knows who Chris Kyle is. One of the things that, you know, in talking to the people who live here, I get a sense that it's more than just this trial, more than just seeking justice. It's a sad situation because it also highlights what our men and women who served in combat face when they come home. You know, what war does to you. Even in the movie, you saw how Chris Kyle's time at war, how it affected him. And so, it seems to be a pretty somber event, this whole court hearing, this whole trial. You know, it's a big loss on all fronts. But the people here, they want justice served. And by served, they want Eddie Ray Ralph in prison, locked up for the rest of his life.
So the death penalty is off the table.
Yeah, it is. Prosecution, they said early on that they would not be trying to give Eddie Ray Ralph the death penalty. So it would be life in prison if convicted. But even if this insanity plea works, I'm not a member of the jury. I don't know how they're going to react, how they're going to take this. But even if it works, he's still going to be confined to some sort of mental lockup.
I see. You know, it comes down to, I guess, the broader picture that this trial and Chris Kyle has brought to the attention with his movie and with his book is how these people that are highly trained come home and deal with living in those highly stressful environments.
Yeah, really stressful. And, you know, one of the things that Chris Kyle did to help himself heal was to help others, to help other veterans who came home after serving in the war, to spend time with them. And this was a case where Eddie Ray Ralph's mother contacted Chris Kyle and said, "Can you help my son? He suffers from PTSD. He's had a lot of problems. He's been institutionalized a couple of times, and he's having a real hard time. He can't keep a job." And Chris Kyle, being the man that he was, helped him. And for that, he was killed. He and his friend, Chad Littlefield, were both shot in the back several times that day, on February 2nd, 2013. And so while the defense has not argued, has not denied that that their client shot and killed these two, their defense case is far different than what the prosecution is saying. The defense is saying he was insane at the time. He was insane. And because of that, he should be found not guilty. And the prosecution said, no, he's not insane. He was not insane. He was intoxicated on marijuana at the time. And he knew what he was doing was wrong when he pulled that trigger, and that, that is not insane. And so that from a rebuttal witness for the state on Friday, a psychiatrist, took the witness stand. We expect one more rebuttal witness today before closing arguments, and then the jury gets the case. That said, the weather has been a big problem here, and it wouldn't be surprising if this trial was pushed off for another day or two. There's a winter storm watch that'll soon turn into a winter storm warning. They're expecting 1 to 4 inches of snow here in North Texas, where temps right now are below freezing, and it's not Boise. They don't know how to deal with snow. They don't know how to deal with ice here, so that could change some things.
We go back to the details of the case. These two warriors shot in the back. Just that statement alone resonates.
Yeah. Well, it certainly does. And and one of the things that came out in this case, Kevin, was some text messages that were sent by Chris Kyle to Chad Littlefield as they were en route to that gun range on February 2nd, 2013. Chris Kyle texted Chad, who was sitting right next to him, and said, "This guy is straight up nuts." And Chad texted back saying, I hope you have my six. I hope you have my back. And ultimately, the two were both shot in the back. Chris Kyle was also shot in the head. And they died. And Taya Kyle, in very emotional testimony, said she never expected to get the call, to get that answer, to get that knock on her door. She always expected it when he was in war, but she never expected it stateside. And that's what happened to her. She got that call that her husband wouldn't be coming home. There's still that that burning question of why. You can say that he was insane or psychotic at the time, but still there wasn't really ever an answer to that question. Why would you kill the guys that were there to help you? That has not been answered.
Jeff Manasso, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Jeff Manasso, Fox News Radio. Time for traffic now at 580 KIC.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO. Idaho's first radio station.
During this time when Kayla was being held, the U.S. traded 5 Taliban prisoners for Bo Bergdahl.
That made the whole situation worse. Mm-hmm. Because that's when the demands got greater, they got larger, they realized that they had something. They realized that, well, if they're going to let 5 people go for one person, why won't they do this or why won't they do that?
And did you personally feel, why is that trade okay, but something similar is not okay for Kayla?
I actually asked the president that question when we were in the White House. Yeah, that was pretty hard, you know, to take.
There we have it. There we have it right there. Kayla Mueller's parents yesterday on the Today Show, we had a chance to talk a little bit about that later in the program. By the way, Representative Barbieri will join us coming up at 7:05 concerning his comments that are making national attention. And like I said, when I find out that there are conservatives that are taking a beating from the libs, we always, always rush to their defense. We'll have more on that coming up. But a unique situation that has been picked up by Fox News, that has been picked up by others, and this situation involving, did the Bo Bergdahl prisoner swap make it worse for people fighting ISIS, people being taken by ISIS? You have the Mueller family saying that they weren't allowed to raise that $6.2 million of ransom. James Foley's family, the young man from New Hampshire, did you know that our government under the Obama administration threatened to prosecute the Foley family if they talked to the press, threatened to prosecute the Foley family if they looked at paying that ransom, threatened to prosecute them for trying to bring their son home? And only when James Foley was killed by ISIS were they allowed to talk to the press. And so here you have the Mueller family on NBC's Today Show going on and on and on about the loss of their daughter. One consequence, perhaps Americans will not go and try and help the rest of the world. Mr. Foley, a beautiful young man. Miss Mueller, a beautiful young woman. But I don't believe the rest of the world wants our help. And instead of going to Turkey and to Syria, there are plenty of places in this country that need people like the Muellers and the Foleys. And, well, you know, we're going to go to Kenya and this place and that place. And, yeah, they are in desperate need of help. But if you're going to kill us, if you're going to ransom us, and now the poor family of James Foley, ISIS wants $1 million for his body. And you can't argue that this administration has really done anything but made the situation worse. And I really think it comes down to one thing, this ridiculous optic, and that's what it is, that we don't negotiate with terrorists. Carter negotiated with the Iranians. We're negotiating with the Iranians now. We traded arms for hostages. You go back to Iran-Contra. And yet, well, we don't negotiate. The terrorists know that we negotiate. But when you have families, well, that's a certain, that's weakness. Yeah, until it's your kid. Al-Qaeda has grown 4 to 5 times in the last 3 years under this administration. ISIS, the JV team, is spreading everywhere, encroaching on Europe and possibly this country. And here you have these loving folks talking about their beautiful daughter. I think the consequence is Americans should stay home. The rest of the world, psh, sorry, if you're going to kidnap us, if you're going to allow that to happen, then we're not going to come save you. We're not going to come give you our money. See how long the rest of the world lasts without our generous humanitarian aid. That's one. Number two, get rid of this facade that we don't negotiate with terrorists. Go back to Iran, go back to arms for hostages, go back to backdoor channels that happen all the time. Clearly, we don't negotiate. Was Gaddafi a terrorist? Well, he was our terrorist at the end. And then you have people critical of the Bergdahl deal. What was that? What was that? You know, I walked I don't know how many miles from Haley to here for Bo Bergdahl, for the military. The state embraced PFC Bergdahl. And if you're going to do it for Bo Bergdahl, with respect, shouldn't you do it for everyone? And you heard the family say it made the situation worse. Think about that. I'd love to hear what you think next. 24 in Boise, time for traffic now. Kevin Miller in the morning coming up next, in his own words, unfiltered, uncensored, Representative Barbieri on the mini brouhaha at the State House.